There's a free audiobook waiting for you at audibletrial.com/mightymovie. Audible has over 100,000 titles for you to choose from, and they're all waiting for a good person like you to take them home. audibletrial.com/mightymovie, because the books are lonely. We've got some good news for the unemployed. With no college degree or high school diploma, you can have an exciting career in the challenging field of being drugged unconscious while old men cuddle you. We talk with Julia Lee about Sleeping Beauty on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast.
Let me tell you how I think we should proceed. I'll describe the job, and then, if you're interested, we'll discuss particulars. You will be working with other girls, some of whom will have more responsibilities. There is room for promotion. We rely on mutual trust and discretion, and I'm obliged to tell you there are heavy penalties. Very heavy penalties for any breaches of discretion. Am I clear?
It's not a game.
You are very beautiful. Very talented.
But we're going to make you even more beautiful. Even more talented.
You'll feel profoundly restored. Good night.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is MMP. Welcome. Award-winning novelist Julia Lee makes her directing debut with Sleeping Beauty, a strange, quiet, and quite erotic tale in which Emily Browning plays a young college student, Lucy, who becomes the employee of an upmarket service that drugs women and allows men to do whatever they wish with their sleeping bodies, so long as there's no penetration or damage. It's a fascinating rumination on male and female sexuality, and eventually on how we regard our lives and ultimately our deaths. Julia Lee turned out to be one of the more unusual interviews I've done, and not just because she admitted before we started that she was fighting a hangover. Give a listen, you'll see what I mean. I wanted to ask you, about 5 years ago, there was a German film called House of the Sleeping Beauties that essentially covered the same idea, but actually from the point of view of one of the clients. And I just wanted to know if you had heard of this film, whether you had taken any inspiration from it.
In terms of the inspiration for Sleeping Beauty, the way I talk about it is I had read the classic fairy tale as a girl, the Disney version. I'd read the original fairy tale, the more brutal, Charles Perrault. I had also read and loved two very well-known novellas. One, The House of Sleeping Beauties by Yasunari Kawabata, one by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And yeah, both of those stories are told from the point of view of an older man who pays to spend the night alongside a drugged young girl. Even in the Bible, we have King David sending out to spend the night alongside sleeping virgins. There are sleeping girls on the internet. So I think this concept of a sleeping beauty is an enduring one, and it exists. It's out there in the ether. And And I suppose that I responded to that and transformed it. And this film, it's Lucy's story in that she's in every frame of the film. And in a way, it's a portrait of youth, willfully reckless youth. At the same time, I think it is made whole, I hope, by the portraits of the older men. And we do get to see their inner worlds.
The idea of this being a portrait of willfully reckless youth in the person of Lucy is an interesting one. The first time we see her, she is participating in an experiment. And it strikes me that in her interactions, particularly her sexual interactions, there's a lack of passion there. It's more like she's treating her body as a laboratory. Do you look at her in that way?
I think that's a very astute comment that of yours.
Thank you.
I just find it very hard to say it so neatly, something like that, so I don't want to say that. But, you see her in you see her in this opening scene, which is a scene I actually really love. And on the few occasions that I've watched the film with an audience, I have, in that opening scene, I don't watch the screen, I watch the audience, and I see their physical sympathy almost with Lucy, who has to swallow this rubber balloon on this end of this tube, and it's quite a very real, almost visceral response, I guess.
Watching Emily Browning go through all of this, and particularly in the latter portion of the film when she begins to participate in this service, it becomes apparent to me, at least, that how demanding a role this must have been both physically and mentally for her. What were the challenges that you anticipated? How did you meet them?
Actually, oddly enough, the scene that Emily was probably the most concerned about was the first scene, this swallowing. And in terms of shooting these chamber scenes, it was a closed set. We did a lot of rehearsal and a lot of preparation because the shooting style of this longer takes meant that I had to marry the camera to the performance and also be very aware of the pace of the scene, the flow of time, because we wouldn't, even though we did work with time in the edit, we weren't really building pace in the edit room. I really had to carry that with me on the day as well. So yeah, these three things we had to be aware of. There was some room to move on the day, but I have to say we were extremely prepared, and I think that helped with those more challenging scenes. I think we all knew what we were going to be doing, and Emily had read the script and she understood the script, and she's a great actor, and so she gives herself to the role. She embodies the character wholly. With those scenes where she had to be asleep, I did suggest, and I think she took it up, that she practiced meditation, and she was, you know, attached to the film, of course, some months before we shot, and so she had time to work on that. And I think in those scenes she says that she was quite focused on her breath, you know. But it was I think she's a great actor. I think it was a great performance, and I realised I was very lucky to work with her on my first film. Yeah.
Required a lot of trust on her part. Was that difficult to earn?
I think trust is extremely important in filmmaking. with Emily Browning, with every actor, you know, I like to think that I, as the director, am helping them do their best work. And trust, and with your heads of department, I mean, trust is extremely important. And I don't know, that's an organic thing, and it begins from the minute you meet somebody. And I guess it's in your bearing, and I do try to be trustworthy.
The film says a lot, I think, particularly more about how men relate to women than necessarily women relate to men, or maybe you disagree with me on that. And what I wonder is the notion that men would willingly and probably eagerly pay for an opportunity to be with a beautiful woman in which there was no need for interaction, there was no need for communication. I wonder if you feel that's a natural state. Is it imbued by our culture?
I think these are your reflections, and it would be great for you to explore them. Do you know? Like,
yeah.
Seriously, I do. I think it's like it's your reading, and it's great, and you should explore it.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say? I think that these. The thing about this particular film, what we're really seeing is these are older men. I mean, these are men haunted by death in a way. Death is present, extremely present for one of the characters. But I think that is important. Do you know what I mean? These are not virile 30-year-old guys with a young sleeping girl. That would be a different film.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a completely different film. That's my comment.
Well, continuing my impressions of it, that's all I have after all. Weirdly enough, I think one of the significant scenes in it is a very brief scene with Lucy in an electronics store, where she goes, and I believe it's to buy a certain device that is used at the end of the film, which we won't give away. And she asks the service person there what he thinks of this device, and he says something very non-committal, something on the order of it's okay, I guess.
Something like, I can't remember, what does he say, like, not bad? Yeah, not bad, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And she goes ahead and buys the device, and I think the idea, at least it struck me, that she had already had her mind made up, and the communication was inconsequential in that particular case. And I'm wondering if that idea of sort of communication that is not really productive or consequential spreads to the rest of the film.
I think you should explore that.
Well, this is no fun. I could interview myself this way. I don't want to put, you know, words in your mouth, certainly, but...
Yeah, no, that's the word. I don't have a comment to help you on that scene, except to say that I also really love that scene. And I love his performance in it.
Mm-hmm. It's
a very small moment, but he's really great.
Yeah. It is a stint.
In this film, there are many small moments. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they have a cumulative or saturating effect of small moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. it goes to building a whole. Small moments go to building this ephemeral thing, which is atmosphere or tone, or you know, otherworldliness. Or I mean, I must say, with this film, I wasn't aiming for a strict naturalism. I feel it's quite far from the kitchen sink. And instead, I did want something heightened and in terms of watching the film, kind of aware that you're watching the film, this because of this camera as the sort of tender, steady witness, and also in the sound design. I mean, I hoped to create a sort of acute listening, so that feeling almost as if you could have heard a pin drop. And again, these small moments, they sort of all feed into this heightened world, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
And in using these small moments, and that was one of them, and certainly it did stand out, obviously, for me. You're using these small...
Did you hear anybody sort of laugh at that scene?
No, I actually saw this on a screener.
Oh, okay.
So, I didn't go to a screening. I would have liked to have seen this in an audience, but...
Yes. So I find it quite bemusing, his service. So I find it quite bemusing.
Mm-hmm. And we're very used to that type of service in the United States here, too.
Yeah, okay.
But you do, as I say, you do use these little moments to build your narrative, and it sort of breaks away from an orthodox linear narrative in that way. And that
it's linear. It has to be linear in that it flows from beginning to end.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not traditional three-act structure.
Yeah, exactly. And... which leads me to where you get to at the end of the film, which, and here again, don't want to describe it, but took me by surprise the point that you decide to end the story. And I wanted to know if you felt that is the place where you wanted Lucy to get to.
I have to say, with the ending, for me, this, the way the film ends is, was... To me, it was my instinct. This, you know, this was the ending for me. I think somebody might have suggested at some point in time, oh, maybe Lucy should go back into the real world, or we see what happens to her. You know, I don't talk too much about it, but no, for me, the way it ended was. Always my instincts. So I didn't really quit. Yeah, to me, that's the end. Didn't really for me, it's the right ending. Yeah. Yeah. No, and I like them. And also there's the... I mean, the final scene is a sort of this meditative coda in a way. And I like that. Yeah. But I like what happens before that too. One way sometimes I would try to talk about it was this idea of you blow into a balloon and the balloon gets bigger and bigger and bigger and at some point it has to give. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How strictly did you script this? I mean, clearly there are moments that needed to be scripted precisely, but did you allow yourself flexibility in the storytelling?
Do you mean the difference between what was on the page and what we shot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I did stick very closely to the script. And also, I had gone in with a lot of preparation as well. Like that said, there were things that happened on the day during the shoot. I think there was even a couple of lines, you know, that were thrown in by the actor, and to good effect. Yeah. So. I do like to be very prepared, but I also like to be open on the day, and you have to be anyway. Yeah, no choice.
Do you view this film as erotic?
I just don't answer that.
You're leaving me hanging here, and please excuse the pun, but you know.
So nice not having to answer questions. It's not a job interview.
There are certain Republican presidential candidates who could use your schooling.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know. Julia, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you.
And after seeing Sleeping Beauty, or maybe even before, you might want to further indulge your fantasies. And it turns out that if you go to audibletrial.com/mightymovie, you can sign up for a free 14-day trial and get, as a free download, some provocative titles. Maybe you'd like to start in on Anne Rice's own erotic S&M take on the Sleeping Beauty legend, The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty, or discover how women themselves explore their fantasies with one of the wide-ranging erotica collections. Or maybe you want to delve under the surface of the spirit that drives such desires with Clarissa Estes' Women Who Run with Wolves, Myths and Stories of the Wild Woman Archetype. Those are just a few of the 100,000-plus books you can choose from as your free download, playable on iPhone, iPad, MP3 player, Kindle, pretty much anything. Just go to audibletrial.com/mightymovie to start your free 14-day trial. Can't get it just by going to the regular website. It is available over at audibletrial.com/mightymovie. Go, explore, enjoy. And Sleeping Beauty opened in theaters on December 2nd and is available on demand as well. You can find out if it's playing near you by going to the official website. We've got the link for that over at mightymoviepodcast.com. The trailer is there as well. And if you want to write me, that email address is dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. We're working on a new show for next week, but don't have the interview yet. Stay tuned. Something will be turning up, and it'll be good. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2011, Dan Persons, all rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.